Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is a great joy to welcome the author Thomas Halliday, a paleontologist and an evolutionary biologist. His new book, Other Lands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds. Thomas takes us backwards in time to what we know about the beginning of life as we understand it has evolved over the 500 million plus years that we've watched multicellular life congeal and cooperate. We begin, however, in something where Homo sapiens is present. It's called the Pleistocene, and it's a matter of going to a place we know very well, which is Alaska. But this is a time when the sea levels are much lower and there is a connection to Siberia called Beringia. Thomas, congratulations. You write beautifully. And sometimes your metaphors are so convincing, I don't want to use the scientific name. So what is the mammoth steppe and what was happening there 20,000 years ago? Good evening, Thomas.
Good evening. Yes, the mammoth steppe was, during much of the Pleistocene, the largest ecosystem on the planet. So it's a grassland which is managed by big herbivores, so mammoths, as the name suggests, but also things like woolly rhinos and muskoxen and bison and you know, relatives of some of the creatures that are still around today, like caribou and so on. But it stretched from Western Europe all the way through what is now Russia, across, as you say, this connection between Siberia and North America, known as Beringia, and then into Alaska and the Yukon. And it was not a sort of wholly identical landscape across the entirety of its length. Obviously, you've got bits of local variation going on here and there, but broadly, it's this sort of dry, cold, grass-dominated ecosystem, which is managed by these large herbivores. And yes, the book opens in a chapter set 20,000 years ago, which is during the height of the last time that we had these ice sheets advance from the poles, and at a time when Alaska was, unlike today, a relatively sort of arid place. We're on the edge of this sand sea, a sea of sand dunes near a place which is now called the Ikpikpuk River. We sort of open with scenes of horses, wild horses, which of course were native to North America, but had became extinct between the setting of this book and historical times. All of the horses that are in North America now were brought over from Europe by later colonizers. But it's one of these ecosystems which, although it was the largest ecosystem on the planet, is essentially non-existent today. There are a few patches which are in Mongolia, which are sort of quite good analogues for what the mammoth steppe would have been like. But these are really very small. And so the mammoth steppe is one of those great examples of how you get ecosystems that rise and fall themselves, not just species that appear and disappear through the fossil record, but actually entire communities arising and then evanescing into extinction.
You give us what appears to me to be the apex predator, Arctotis simus. I write down here that it weighed a ton, that it was a short-faced bear. Was it hunted by the Homo sapiens present at the time? Do we know if... I know they were said to have hunted mammoths, but did they hunt that bear?
The interactions between humans and Arctotis are I'm not entirely sure if there's any direct evidence of Arctotis bones with the wounds from spears and so on, but they certainly would have come into contact. At the time that the chapter is set, this is Before humans are known from this particular part of North America, although humans are known from along the southern coast of Alaska and into the sort of the rest of North America, as it were, the ice sheet kind of cut off Alaska from the rest of North America and so prevented humans from moving through for quite a long time. There's some sort of tantalizing evidence of some human footprints which have recently been discovered only earlier this year, which suggests that maybe they were there a lot earlier than we thought. But yes, certainly Arctidus and humans would have come into contact. Possibly more important for Arctidus, though, is that the brown bear, the ancestors of the grizzly bear, they came over into the rest of North America at the same time as humans. So there may be a sort of competition element between those two species as well. But yeah, Arctidus was a fearsomely large bear, I mean, considerably larger than modern humans and able to stretch several meters up into the air if it reared up on its hind legs. There are some people that believe that it was, so it's relatively long-limbed, and some people believe that that meant that it would be able to be a sort of pursuit predator. Others argue that it had more of a sort of scavenging lifestyle. So the particular diet of the short-faced bear is a little bit up for debate. In the book, I sort of present it scavenging on the carcass of a woolly mammoth during the depths of winter, which is very plausible behavior, even if it were to be a main predator. But yes, what I try to do in the book is try and have ecosystems which humans are, although they're present at this time in the world, this is not a heavily modified human environment. This is something that is a sort of relatively natural ecosystem and collection of species.
Let's quickly go to where we also find our ancestors. This is 4 million years ago, the Pliocene, where Kenya is now, Kenya and Ethiopia, a lake, Lanyamon. And you say that Australopithecus and also Homo erectus were present sleeping in the trees. This is a very large lake. What was happening there that contributes to the richness of the planet?
Oh, there are so many wonderful things in this. So we're talking about the East African Rift Valley, which is Africa is geologically sort of separating and splitting apart. And it leaves this area which is currently filled by a big lake, Lake Turkana. And historically, it has repeatedly refilled with water, and then sediment has come in and filled it up, and then that sediment has been eroded, and there's another lake. So you get these wonderful sequences of lakes through time there. And in fact, you get huge numbers of human remains going back, as you say, 4 million years, back to Australopithecus anamensis, which is the earliest species that we can definitively say is more closely related to us than to chimpanzees. There are a couple of other species that are disputed. But what's important about this environment is it's this really sort of mosaic environment where there's bits of forest, bits of grassland. You've got, galleries of trees along rivers that are known as these sort of gallery forests. And this mixed environment is extremely important in the evolution of humans as a versatile and problem-solving group of organisms. Because we're talking about, and this is before we can say a single species of human, this is what, before, Homo habilis and so on emerged. But yes, sequentially, several human species have occupied this land, and of course still do.
We're speaking of other lands. These are Earths that existed, and there are pieces of them, there's suggestions of them, certainly in the fossil record, but sometimes their descendants are with us in hiding places. The book is Other Lands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds. Thomas Halliday is the author. When we come back, we're going to 5.3 million years ago, the Miocene, and we'll introduce ourselves to the Tethys Ocean. I'm John Bashman.